The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Welcome to Least of These, where I cover the cases that need it most, because every life matters and everyone deserves justice. I'm your host, Leah D., and today I'll be covering the case of Stephen Kraft in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Let's get right to it. Over 400 companies from the United States and Canada fly their aircraft into the Southwest Michigan Regional Airport in Benton Harbor, Michigan every year. It's also home to over 80 privately owned planes and the fleet of a Fortune 200 company. Those flying in for business, keeping up with their busy schedules, touch down and take off with a bird's eye view of the harbor and the thick wooded area around the airport. Travelers touch down and go on about their business, many of them never knowing that in 2001, the land that the airport was built on was at the center of a missing persons investigation. Today's case takes us back 25 years, where part of the property that is now Southwest Michigan Regional Airport was a residential area on the outskirts of Benton Heights neighborhood. Benton Heights, both then and now, is a small, unincorporated community located in Berrien County, Michigan. It's home to roughly 3,500 people. And while many things have changed over the years, the population size has remained about the same. Of course, people come and go, but over the years, it seems it's remained a steady flow of newcomers and those moving on from the community. Anyhow, back in 2001, Benton Heights was a place 12-year-old Stephen Kraft Jr. called home. He, along with his parents and 7-year-old brother, lived on a dead-end street near Red Arrow Highway in the 2100 block of Holly Drive. While the street was on a dead end, that highway was a well-traveled one. Little Stephen was 12 years old and a 6th grader at Hole Elementary. He was well-known in his Benton Heights neighborhood. He had a few friends that lived nearby and also one of his sisters, who by this point was grown and had a husband and child of her own. He'd often play outside with his 2 dogs. He'd also wander through the neighborhood, going door to door to stop and hang out with a friend or to go visit his sister and his baby nephew. On the evening of February 15, 2001, his mom Cheryl was cooking dinner. 12-year-old Stephen headed outside to go to a friend's house, taking his 2 dogs with him as he usually did. It was about 6:30 when he walked out of the door of his home on Holly Drive and promised his mom he'd be back home by 8 p.m. But his mom likely figured he'd be in sooner. It was February in Michigan, and that night it was particularly cold. The temperatures were below freezing. Stephen threw on his teal and purple Charlotte Hornets basketball jacket, laced up his boots, and headed out the door. His mom continued on cooking dinner, but by the time dinner was done, Stephen wasn't home. 8 p.m. came and went with no sign of him. At first, she wasn't all that worried. The family figured he'd probably gone onto his sister's house, was playing with his nephew, and maybe lost track of time. He'd done that many times before. But minutes and then hours ticked on, and Stephen still wasn't home. Sometime between 9 and 10 p.m., Stephen's mom called over to his sister's house to check if he was there. Stephen's sister told her that she hadn't seen him at all that night, and that's when worry began to creep in. The family started searching, going door to door in the neighborhood. Like we talked about before, Stephen was well known by most all of his neighbors. Maybe he was at one of their houses. According to the Herald Palladium, one neighbor reported that he had seen Stephen walking with his two dogs near his home, but that was earlier in the night, sometime between 7 and 8 p.m. His father found footprints in the snow that he thought were Stephen's and his two dogs, around where the neighbor reported seeing him. He followed the tracks to the end of Holly Drive, past a pond that was completely frozen over. The tracks continued a little over a block south of Holly Drive and ended near Harbor Haven Ministries on Irving Street. From what I could gather, Harbor Haven Ministries was a rescue mission that assisted the homeless and helped families in the area that were struggling to access food. Anyhow, as the night began to set in, the temperatures plummeted even further, and that worry that something was wrong set into panic. Stephen had only tossed on a jacket that night. He wasn't wearing a hat or gloves. The 12-year-old wasn't prepared to be out there for an extended period of time in those freezing temperatures. And with that, at around midnight, his father called the Benton Township Police to officially report his 12-year-old son Stephen missing. Officers responded to the home on Holly Drive and spoke with the family and neighbors. About a half hour after Stephen's father called to report him missing, two young girls who attended the same school as Stephen, Hole Elementary, were also reported missing. To have one child vanish in Benton Heights was rare, but three within an hour of each other? What was happening? According to the Charlie Project, Stephen had been in a little bit of trouble at school, which wasn't like him. Just before he had gone missing, he had been suspended from school for 5 days after an altercation with another student. Now, school administrators made it clear that Stephen had only been defending himself against that other student, but the school had a zero-tolerance policy against fighting, and both Stephen and the other student were suspended. That may sound alarming, but Stephen's parents weren't upset with him. Stephen was a good kid, a good student, and the altercation was the first time he had ever been in any type of trouble, if you even want to call it that. He was defending himself, and that 5-day suspension was over anyways. He was set to be back at school that following day. But with Stephen now missing, every detail leading up to his disappearance was scrutinized. I mean, rightfully so. And with two young girls also reported missing who attended the same school, it was getting serious really quickly. Thankfully, the two girls were located quickly. There aren't many details about where they were or what had happened, but what we do know is that they were found safe. A spokesperson for the police department would later state that their disappearance had absolutely no connection to Stephen's. Those two young girls came home that night, but 12-year-old Stephen Kraft was still missing. After Benton Township Police arrived to the home on Holly Drive to search for 12-year-old Stephen Kraft, officers followed the same tracks his father had and came to the same dead end. The trail ended near Harbor Haven Ministries on Irving Street. Throughout the night, despite freezing temperatures, family, friends, neighbors, and police frantically searched for the 12-year-old. But other than those tracks, they found no trace of him or his two dogs. As the sun rose, news began to spread about Stephen's disappearance. His family began making flyers, which were posted all over Benton Heights. Police officers canvassed the neighborhood, and two ponds were searched. They were frozen over, and there was no crack in the ice found or anything to suggest that Stephen had somehow fell through the ice. The wooded areas around the neighborhood were also searched. Bloodhounds were brought in. The Lansing State Journal reported that the bloodhounds lost Stephen's scent in the ice and blowing snow behind DeGroote's nursery, which was at the end of the street. The family led volunteer searches, and the community came together. Businesses like Lowe's, Kmart, and Meijer donated flashlights. The Benton Township Pizza Hut donated pizzas for searchers. Helicopters flew over the area, and the FBI was called in. Registered sex offenders were looked into, and investigators asked for the public's help. The tips came in by the hundreds. A teenage boy told police that he had seen Stephen picking up bottles outside the Red Arrow tap, and he had watched as Stephen had gotten into a four-wheel drive Toyota. But police looked into that and determined that that wasn't Stephen. Every tip was investigated. The leads were tracked down and followed up on, in addition, of course, to all of the ground searches. But despite all those efforts, not a single clue leading to Stephen was found. 3 days after Stephen vanished, there was a spark of hope. The Herald Palladium reported that one of his two dogs, an older German Shepherd Chow mix, returned home. She was uninjured but acting a little strange. But with her return, there was renewed hope. Stephen's father told the outlet that he felt she might lead him to Stephen, and it seems she tried. She kept going back to that spot near Harbor Haven Ministries. Stephen's father stated, "She was about frozen, but she had no injuries. I looked at her paws, and they weren't cut or bleeding as if she'd traveled a long way. I couldn't find any injuries at all, but she was kind of cowed. If you raised your voice, she squatted down, and she's not that kind of dog. She's usually running around raising Cain. Every time we let her out, she keeps going back to that mission back there." Again, it seemed like that's where Stephen's trail ended. It begged the question, had someone abducted the 12-year-old from that very spot? With it being a rescue mission, people did pass through there pretty frequently, some of them likely with criminal records. Who, if anyone, had been there that night, and where was Stephen's other dog? Investigators would soon have an answer to that second question. Stephen's other dog, a 6-month-old German Shepherd puppy, was found a day after his older dog had returned home. The Lansing State Journal reported that a neighbor called police after seeing the puppy chewing on a deer carcass beside the road near Blue Creek, which was 1.5 miles north of Stephen's home. The dog was out there, wandering around, trying to survive. The terrain in those roadside woods was swampy, with trees and overgrown brush. The area was searched, but nothing was found. Days turned into weeks, with no sign of Stephen. While investigators sifted through leads, Stephen's father searched relentlessly for his son. The family raised money for a reward for information that could help them find him, money that they certainly didn't have. His father had been out of work since the day Stephen went missing, and in the midst of the search of his son, he was unable to even pay his rent. The Herald Palladium reported that the family's landlord wanted them out. While his son was missing, the landlord was trying to have the family evicted. I think that's something we don't talk about near enough. When a loved one goes missing, life for that family stops completely, but the world moves on like nothing happened. The rent is still due, car payments, phone bills, all of it. Their world is shattered in an instant, but the light company is still calling, wondering why the payment is late. It's a cruel, heartbreaking reality. And in this case, that landlord's a prick. I mean, I'm just saying, we do call it like we see it around here. But it looks like the community came together to help fund the reward, and to help the family not be thrown out in the cold while their 12-year-old was missing. At some point, however, they did end up moving, although it's unclear when or why. Those weeks turned into months, and Stephen Kraft Jr. remained missing. In the spring, when the snow had finally melted away, authorities searched about 4 miles of Blue Creek, near where the puppy had been found. They also searched the pond behind Harbor Haven Ministries again. By the summer, Stephen's case was featured on America's Most Wanted. As it turned out, his sister Jody had sent in newspaper articles and asked for the show to bring attention to Stephen's disappearance. And they did. Tips came in, but unfortunately, none of them led to Stephen. His family tried their best to keep his case in the news, to keep the flyers hung and the public aware that he was still missing. Leads came and went, and for a brief time, Stephen Kraft's case was linked to the case of Sean Hornbeck and Ben Ownby. And if you don't know their stories, Sean and Ben both spoke on an episode of CBS News 48 Hours Mystery back in 2009, in an episode titled Kidnapped, Sean Hornbeck's Incredible Story. If you don't know that case, I highly recommend you check it out. It's also available in podcast form on 48 Hours. I'll be sure to drop a link to the podcast in the show notes. Sean and Ben are incredible examples of resiliency and bravery, and everyone should know their story. For today, I'll make a long, horrific story short. In 2002, at the age of 11, Sean Hornbeck was abducted while riding a bike to his friend's house in Richwoods, Missouri. Sean was beaten, tortured, sexually assaulted, nearly killed, and held captive in a filthy apartment for more than 4 years. And then, on January 8th of 2007, 13-year-old Ben Ownby was abducted by the same man in Beaufort, Missouri. Ben was taken shortly after getting off his school bus. His 15-year-old neighbor saw a strange truck speed off in the neighborhood, and he took note of the vehicle. After Ben went missing, he notified police and described the vehicle to a T. That description, along with a tip from a local pizzeria owner, led police to the apartment of 41-year-old Michael Devlin. Devlin was the manager of the pizzeria. Investigators were able to quickly locate the vehicle and Michael Devlin, who confessed to kidnapping not only Ben Ownby, but also Sean Hornbeck. Police located both of the boys inside Devlin's apartment. Devlin ultimately pleaded guilty to a litany of both state and federal charges. He was sentenced in state court to 74 life sentences for kidnapping and the sexual assault of the two boys, among other things. And in federal court, he received an additional 170 years for child sexual abuse material and crimes related to that. Those sentences are to run consecutively. Safe to say that that sack of shit ain't never getting out. In 2007, KFVS News 12 reported that a police task force was now looking at Michael Devlin as a suspect in the case of 5 missing boys, 1 in Illinois, 3 in Missouri, and 1 in Western Michigan. That one in Western Michigan was 12-year-old Stephen Kraft. And of all the cases, at the time, the task force felt the strongest connection was to that of the case of Stephen. Police told the outlet that the FBI had subpoenaed all of Devlin's timesheets from where he worked for more than 20 years, trying to see if there was a connection between him and the missing boys. They had also learned that as a child, Devlin's family rented a cottage in Pentwater, Michigan, which was just 2 hours north of Benton Township. Benton Township Police Chief Vince Fecky told KFVS 12 that he saw the similarities in the cases, stating, "I think the similarities are there as to what he did in Missouri could have happened up here." Stephen's sister Jody agreed. She said, "It's very eerie to think this guy, you've watched him on TV, and he could possibly know after 6 years where your brother is. This guy was in Michigan. The highway was more than a mile and a half from our home. Then come to find out, he had kidnapped 2 other children for sure." She went on to say that if Devlin had something to do with Stephen's disappearance, he should just come clean. After all, he wasn't going to get out anyway. She went on to say, "What's another 10, 20 years? He's not getting out. Let us have our children back. Let us be able to put them to rest or bring them home." It seems that ultimately the FBI decided there was no direct link between Michael Devlin and Stephen Kraft, at least not one that they could prove, and investigators were back at square one. There are some that still believe Devlin might have been involved in Stephen's disappearance. And then there are other theories out there, theories that someone in the neighborhood who knew Stephen could be responsible for his disappearance, maybe a neighbor that he knew or someone he was close to. or maybe someone at the mission that night. However, even as the years have passed, there's still so little evidence for investigators to go on. Detective Delmar Lange of the Benton Township Police Department once stated to the Herald Palladium, "There are no other witnesses, no trail of clothes, nothing. That's what makes this case so unusual." 25 years have gone by, and that statement still rings true today. So much has changed over those 2.5 decades. In 2005, Stephen's childhood home, along with many of his neighbors' homes, were demolished to make way for the expansion of Southwest Michigan Regional Airport. Shortly after the 20-year anniversary of Stephen's disappearance, on February 19, 2021, his father, Stephen Kraft Sr., died at 58 years old, never having answers as to what happened to his son. He searched for his son all the way until the end. A little less than 2 months after Stephen Sr.'s death, Stephen's mom, Cheryl, also passed away on April 3, 2021. She, too, never stopped looking for Stephen. FBI Special Agent Kovac recalled that Cheryl kept books full of his sketches and shared them with her as she worked on his case. A lot has changed, but one thing remains the same. Stephen's family is still searching for answers. His sister Jody picking up where their parents left off. Someone out there knows something, and it's beyond time to come forward. Stephen Earl Kraft II was born on January 11, 1989 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was last seen on February 15, 2001 in Benton Heights, Michigan. At the time of his disappearance, he was 5'2", 100 pounds, with sandy brown hair and green eyes. He was last seen wearing an aqua and purple Charlotte Hornets basketball jacket, a tan and white striped t-shirt, tan parachute pants, and black boots. He has ties to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Lexington, Kentucky. He would be 37 years old today. Anyone with information about this case can contact the Benton Township Police Department at 1-269-926-8221 or Crime Stoppers at 1-800-342-7867. Or you can also reach out to your local FBI office. And that, my friends, is all I've got for this week. Be sure to join me next Thursday for an all-new episode. In the meantime, you can find me on Instagram at @least_of_these or my Facebook at @leastofthesepodcast. And if you're sick of ad interruptions, I've got good news for you. You can get all your episodes ad-free just the way you like them for just $2 a month. And as a member of Patreon, you'll be the first to be notified when new tiers will be launched with exclusive episodes and a few bonus surprises. Head on over to patreon.com/leastofthese to support the show today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. If you know something, say something. And until next time, be good to each other. Oh, the lack of evidence in this case is so frustrating. There's literally nothing. At least not that we know of publicly. Stephen left his house and literally vanished. And I definitely believe there was foul play in this case. I don't think Stephen got lost or got hurt out there in the elements. He knew that neighborhood, and when he left, I don't think he had any intention of staying out in the cold. Who was the friend that he was going to visit? I could find no reports on that. Who were that friend's parents? I mean, I'm sure the police have looked into it and know who they are. They're just not telling us. But I want to know, Did he ever make it over there? If he did, what time did he leave? Which direction did he go? There are so many questions. And that area of Benton Heights wasn't the greatest neighborhood at that time. There was quite a bit of crime going on. I'd really love to know who he intended on going to see that night and who their parents were. With a window of time and an area that small and a neighborhood where most everybody knew each other, my theory is that it was someone right there. Someone who knew Stephen. Someone he possibly trusted. And just to make it clear, I'm absolutely not talking about his family here. I did read in one of the old articles that his dad had passed a polygraph, but I really don't give that much weight to a polygraph. What I do give weight to is the fact that this man either almost lost his house in the search for his son, or actually did lose his house in the search for his son. He tried to get the dog to show him where he was. He was heartbroken, clearly. The whole family was. I think it was more like a neighbor, or an acquaintance. Someone Stephen trusted at least a little bit. And I hate that more than anything. I do kind of go back and forth and think there's a slight possibility that it could have been either someone around the mission or someone just passing through. Someone who saw an opportunity to do something evil and took it. I think that's less likely given the circumstances, but not impossible. What I do believe very strongly is that nothing happens in a vacuum, and somebody out there has information that could blow this case wide open. Someone saw something. Someone said something. A family member of the perpetrator had a feeling they were involved. There's usually someone out there that knows. Someone who has a piece to the puzzle, and they may not even realize it's as important as it is. And if that's you, do the right thing. It's the very least you could do for a family that's suffered so much already. They've suffered not only the loss of their loved one, but wild accusations being thrown around. I've seen plenty of that out there in the interwebs, and it's frankly disgusting. And that's about all I got to say about that. Y'all know I love you more than my luggage, and I can't wait to talk at you next week. But until then, bye, boo thang!